Greg Milford, PB. Deputy Prime Minister, there's increased competition between the states for what we now know as the scarce resources. And there's also increasing tendency of contractors to make decisions about which projects they're going to work on the basis of the contractual models that the states are putting forward. I was wondering if you could comment on the potential for national approaches to procurement to ensure that the economic and productivity gains are maximised in the national interest.
Well, yes, there is. Part of the discussions that we're engaging with the states at the moment is focused on exactly that. We're operating under an historical system whereby, for example, in road funding, the state authorities have the majority of the responsibility in terms of they have the resumptive powers, they have the environmental powers in terms of identifying corridors and then getting them zoned appropriately. They historically have always managed the network, whether they be state highways or part of the old national highway system, and therefore have always had the responsibility of either undertaking the work or contracting the work out. There have been varied experiences during the course of AusLink 1, some good, some fairly bloody ordinary in terms of the contracting process and the certainty in terms of cost. I'll give you two examples. First example, in 1996, when we first announced our participation with the New South Wales government in upgrading the Pacific Highway and providing 50-50 funding to specific projects. One of the early ones was to do about 27 kilometres of road through the Bulahdelah Mountains, just north of Newcastle. And there was that project was identified, was costed, went out to tender. I think it was a DCM type contract, and I think there was something like between a $30 or $50 million saving on the original estimation on that project. That's the one extreme, and I actually spoke about that to Les Wallinger this morning, the head of the RTA, because he was not the head of the RTA then, but he was at a senior level, and I remember as a new minister at the time. Negotiating that and talking about that, and we were sort of reflecting on that as being a very positive outcome, and probably one of the worst experiences we've had. I'll talk to the Queenslanders about this afternoon, and that was the interchange that is being built between the Ipswich motorway and the Logan motorway that was estimated and costed at I think $165 million, and when the final contract was let it was $255 million. The Commonwealth's paying 100% of the project, so the Commonwealth wore the $90 million blowout. Well, I've just said that is totally unacceptable, and we've got to find a different and better way of doing this. We've made some suggestions to the states, but certainly we want to get some uniformity in process. My understanding is we are going to need some guidance, advice and input from the construction and contracting industry to try and help design a mechanism, a process, if you like, that A, adds more rigour to the original costing analysis, but most importantly gives us some certainty when we put forward projects to central agencies for funding. We have a fair amount of confidence that you're going to achieve those targets in terms of cost, notwithstanding the normal variation type clauses that have got to be in any contract, and so. It's a long answer, but given those experiences plus many others, the answer to your question is that is certainly an objective of ours as we go forward into AusLink 2. Whether we can achieve all those things remains to be seen, but we believe that we have got to have more rigour and certainty in the process.
Thank you. I have another question over here.
Thank you. David Fabian from Minter Ellison. I'd be interested in the panel's views about the factors which might inhibit private sector participation in the East Coast road system and how those inhibitors might be addressed.
To whom are you addressing the question?
Everybody.
The panel.
Okay.
look, I'll have a go first. There are obviously a number of specific projects that have been enormously successful as far as private sector investment is concerned, under different structures and financial models. Obviously, they require a threshold level of capacity in terms of usage, and as well, you need to add to that the other mechanisms that ensure that the traffic uses those pieces of infrastructure to service the cost, if you like. We did some work on the balance of the task on the Pacific Highway, for example, and that analysis indicated that the savings that would be generated by moving to a fully tolled network on the entire length of the highway over the residual work left to be done was not going to generate enough savings to make it worthwhile, and that was the judgment that we took on that. Now, I continue to say that there will always be projects that in the Auslink corridors that we are involved in and the states are involved in that ought to be prime candidates for private sector involvement of one form or another. And I mean, it's early stages, but certainly I would suggest, and I said this to Eric Rosendahl this morning, that the link between the M7, M2 and the F3 has got to be a candidate. Western Sydney Orbital, the M7, has been a great example of some public funding as initiating a major project and then a private sector concession to construct and operate for a period of time is brought forward a critical piece of infrastructure that might have been decades away otherwise. And so, my answer from our perspective is where we can, we will, because then that relieves pressure on the scarce resources we have to be targeted at those pieces of infrastructure that must be fully publicly funded. And that goes for rail as well. And hopefully I made myself quite clear. And there has been a significant amount of interest in the new proposed corridor that we're doing the scoping study on now. We certainly, from a Commonwealth perspective, don't intend to build it all. Well, we want to ensure, and we'll know when we get to the end of this process, whether it's it's a bankable option for the private sector to invest in. We certainly expect it will be, and we certainly expect that there'll be enough competitive pressures to ensure that the private sector will invest in it.